This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Judy Dempsey, a senior scholar for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Judy is in Berlin observing events of these last days to do with the large picture called a drone wall. The emergency meeting that happened in these last days between nations that are threatened by what appear to be Russian probes using drones, surveillance drones so far to my knowledge, randomly or with a map that I cannot solve. We've had reports from Poland, of course, that began the story, but we've had reports from as deep in as Denmark, also along the Finnish frontier. There have been warplanes flying near to the ADIZ, the identification zone of Romania, and also the United States, Alaska. It's not clear that this is one pattern that we can solve or whether there's more to come, but the European allies, some of them, have met to talk about it. Is this the beginning of a European military presence, quite independent of the U.S.? Because I note in no reporting that I've read was the U.S. president at this meeting. I'm sure they had ears there, but not a major leadership, which has been the contention for some years now. Judy, a very good day to you. Is the drone story, is that a dominant story in Berlin, or is it subheading? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John, and thanks for having me on your show. It's a big story here. It's a big story in a lot of the North European capitals and the Eastern European members of NATO and the EU capitals, definitely. And you know, the question is this escalation by Russia? Curiously, none of them want to explicitly name Russia, but they clearly do suspect, and they might as well say it is Russia. Russia's testing NATO readiness. Russia's testing the security readiness of the countries that they're sending the drones over. And actually, it's quite dangerous because if there's an accident, leaving that aside, it's dangerous for another reason. This is about Russia testing European security and defense.
Yes, and that has been true for some time, but I've not seen, and I read from outside, I've not seen a collective wish to gather to talk about it without the United States leadership, or at least a demand for the United States take the leadership because it's presumed we can't fight without it. I didn't see that this time. Is that significant?
I think it is quite significant. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes and what sort of informal meetings are held with senior United States commanders based in Europe, if they're not already called over to the Pentagon for this big meeting. But the thing is that when Trump sort of played down the drones going over Poland, he said, oh, played it down. And Donald Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, said, this is serious. And then when whoever sent the drones, let's assume it was Russia, realized that President Trump wasn't going to take big action, and there was more drone activities in other countries in the EU stroke NATO, and some of the several big countries got together and decided to try to get a coherent drone policy to defend their countries, frankly. And Denmark, who is holding what's called the rotating EU presidency that represents the member states, has taken a very, very tough line on all of this and has closed some of the drone space because there are big two EU summits coming up in Copenhagen and in another city in Denmark in the coming days and weeks.
I noted the Financial Times ran a story also, not only about overflights of warplanes or near overflights of warplanes, but also a spy ship run by the GRU that for some time has been tracking undersea cables. It's quite fantastic. We have elements of the Cold War in motion, and then we have another version saying, why can't we all get along? It's very odd. So I want to go to Berlin, because nothing can really happen without Berlin's at least acceding to it. Is Berlin keen on this idea of a drone wall, a collective defense that it would be created, I guess, out of the best technology coming out of Ukraine's R&D?
Yes, Chancellor Merz is actually growing increasingly keen on the idea, and so is the defence establishment. And you're actually right, because Germany is major, not only is the biggest economy, but they've got a huge military and IT sector, and they're now going to invest in drones. But not only that, they're going to collaborate and cooperate with other European countries as well. There's one point that should be stressed. You mentioned, well, surely they should get together and collectively speak and so on. After 1991, when the Cold War ended, this was the peace dividend. And over the past 25, 30, 30 years, the institutional memory of acting together, of moving transport equipment right across the continent, of having airports ready, of having the flights ready, of having train systems ready to move quickly. All that kind of institutional memory and preparedness was actually lost or completely downgraded, and now they have to build it up very, very quickly.
The drone wall is for all of Europe, running from the Arctic to the Black Sea. Maybe more details are coming. But we can also speak to elections in Europe, indicating a new sense of authority and sobriety about Russian threat. One election in Moldova, but another election I do not have fresh information of that Judy finds significant, and I want to flag it. A local election in North Rhine-Westphalia. What is that, and what is the significance of the results, Judy?
Very briefly, the significance of the result is that that's good news for the governing Christian Democrats, both in North Rhine-Westphalia and, of course, the Chancellor Friedrich Merz's Christian Democratic Union. The Social Democrats, who are in the coalition in Berlin, they didn't do so badly. The really good news from those who are really against the alternative for Germany, that's the far right-wing anti-immigration, anti-NATO, pro-Russia, anti-EU party, they didn't win one council in over 100 councils in what is Germany's most populous state. This was the second round of the election, because there wasn't enough votes to get through for the first. And this is a relief. It's big news. And now the Christian Democrats realize they have to capitalize on it and regain the center and find disaffected voters and speed up housing, speed up education, look after children who are falling through the kind of social network.
If I can recover why this is critical, is that North Rhine-Westphalia is the most populous, I believe, I speak tentatively, of all the German states, with an enormous base that is either discomfited or challenged by moving away from fossil fuel mining, coal, and toward a green future. However, that has dislocated a lot of presumptions of families. The Social Democrats have been powerful there. AfD made an inroad, and the presumption was after the first balloting ground, AfD was climbing. Now, momentarily, it halts. Another election, however, much more central to our understanding of Russian plans, is Moldova. Judy knows where Moldova is. I do, thanks to Judy. Moldova is the Black Sea. It borders Romania and Ukraine. It's tucked in. It's about 2 million people, maybe a little more. It has the Danube on one side and Ukraine on the other. It is right in the middle of Russian ambitions, because Russia has already presumed to take piece of it called Transnistria. I understand there will be a quiz later, but right now I want to speak to how Europe is looking for positives. And with that vote in North Rhine-Westphalia is a positive. The Moldova report is even more so. I read from AFP. This is Agence France, so it's European reporting. Moldova pro-EU party hails poll win despite dirty Russian tactics. And then there's a photograph of the president of Moldova, Maria Sandu, who took over 50% of the vote. What is the significance here for all of Europe, but also for the Russian ambitions, Judy?
For all of Europe, if we can speak for all of Europe, it's good news that actually President Sandu mobilized the population, and so did the EU. President Macron of France went to Moldova, and he was accompanied by Friedrich Merz, the German Chancellor. I mean, they made a big push on this because they know what is at stake. Institutionalized Russian influence had Sandu lost, and the pro-Russia parties would have gained more seats in the parliament. So this is a sigh of relief. But it shouldn't lead to complacency. Oh, well, now that's dusted off. These elections are over for a while. Now is the time to actually give incentives, boost the economy, deal with corruption, reach out to the provinces where they're rather still pro-Russian in many ways, but make Europe matter, not by rhetoric, not by saying, oh, join us, but, you know, the nuts and bolts that really matter. And that's the economy, the economy, the economy.
The last time I remember we addressed Moldova directly was when there was a coup rumor in the capital, said to be within hours, something at the airport. Was that paranoia or was it well-founded? And is that coming back or could it come back?
I mean, it's a bit like the drone attacks, but the evidence of Russian interference in the coup, it has been there. And Sandu says she has evidence. And the intelligence resources of Moldova, they're not huge, but they're backed by, wait for it, Ukrainian intelligence, which is very, very important. So, but this was high alert over the past year or two. When I was down there in Moldova nearly a year ago, I mean, they were just so worried that they wouldn't be able to mobilize enough support to win the parliamentary elections. So now she has the mandate as president. Now she has the mandate as a pro-European government. But she knows she cannot waste time, and she knows she has to deliver. Plus 50% is a super result. And the opposition, the pro-Russia, got about 25%, which is really something, given the resources that Russia poured in. It was very disappointing. But it shows it can be done, but now it's delivery date.
Three details. The Moldova vote, the North Rhine-Westphalia vote, and the emergency meeting of the EU to talk collectively without the U.S., I know I'm scratching around for positives, but those strike me as something we've not seen before, and a presumption that we can take care of ourselves. Is that too much, Judy?
Well, we can't take care of ourselves at the moment, and we never could. And actually, the whole origins of the European Union is in the early 1950s was that we wouldn't do security, we would do peace, we would do prosperity. It would be an organization based on cooperation, not war, an end to war. And now it's come right back to, I suppose, haunt the Europeans, but also this is so fundamentally different because we have an administration in the White House that is really saying to the Europeans, you look after Ukraine. In other words, if Ukraine loses, it's your fault. America, parts of the administration, it's hard to know who to believe. It's hard to know what to believe when Trump says that Ukraine can get all its territory back. But in order to do this, it needs really more military support, not a political support, but military support from the United States. But getting back to your point, the Europeans know that the dial has shifted. The dial is no longer moving hand in hand with the Europeans together and the Americans. And now it's a kind of lonely dial, and the Europeans have to find ways to work together very, very quickly. And that means stop competing among each other for drones, for contracts and so on. They've got to actually cooperate as much as possible now.
Judy Dempsey of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a senior scholar in Berlin, also a veteran of reporting on the Middle East. And we're going to head to the Gaza plan next, which is in the air right now in the United States and in Israel. Is it also something that Europe is going to respond to eventually?
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.